All right, welcome back to the Conservation Tillage Conference, St. Cloud, Minnesota. We're here at the expansive Holiday Inn. Holy mackerel, this is it's a building that goes on for acres. It is an amazing place, but it's a great they filled them up, too, here. Sold out. The Conservation Tillage Conference going to be renamed. This is the very final CTC. They're going to rename it next year, and we'll hopefully be back again next. We're going to talk with the guy who started. He cracked the champagne bottle on the hull of the CTC this morning. The keynote presenter, University of Manitoba Professor Dr. David Laub. Hello, Dave.
Hi. How are you?
Real good. Your official title here, Landscape Ecology Department of Soil Science. We're not going to talk about shrubbery, though, around the house.
No. I'm professor of landscape ecology, which is sophisticated language for someone who deals with soils and soil erosion and hydrology.
We have lost in the Red River Valley, and you're the Red River Valley up there south of Winnipeg, too.
Absolutely.
Just because there's the parallel there, then and customs is hard to get through now, a lot more than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
We've all lost a lot of soil in the last 100 years, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. There's no question. Over the last 100, 150 years in the prairies, extending all the way down here into Minnesota, we've lost soil through erosion processes. Everyone thinks about wind and water erosion. And certainly in the valley, there's significant wind and water erosion. And what I was talking about today was also the tillage erosion that occurs. In Minnesota, around this area, see a lot of that tillage erosion.
Snert. But are we talking more about airborne?
No, we're just talking about simply dragging the soil from the hilltops. So if you're thinking about tillage equipment being everything from a plow to a seeder, any row crop cultivation, anything that moves soil, you always move more soil downslope than upslope. And so what I tell farmers often is to think of any tillage equipment or any field equipment. It's really like a road grader with holes cut in the blade. You drive it around long enough over a hill or any hilly land, you're going to drag the topsoil off the top of the hills, and it's going to end up in the bottom. And that's actually what happens in many landscapes, including the flat Red River Valley.
So water runs downhill, so does soil, huh?
Exactly, yeah. So we look at we often refer to it as soil redistribution, but anything that moves soil is going to move more downslope than up. There's a simple force that governs all that, and it's called gravity. And it's actually that simple. And
what is the cost of that to a farmer?
Well, when we've looked at cost, we've looked at the combined effects of wind, water, and tillage erosion, all of those soil erosion processes, and determined how much soil that we see across the landscapes in Canada, the Northern Great Plains, and we find that the cost of soil erosion has actually gone up since the 80s when we introduced conservation tillage. And when we've looked closer at it, we found that the area that's eroded by wind, water, and tillage has decreased through conservation tillage, but the cumulative loss of soil has actually caused a dramatic increase in yield loss. So you have a smaller area that's eroded, but it's actually losing more crop yield now than it did before, which makes sense. You can lose a little bit of topsoil and not much effect. But if you start losing a lot of topsoil, you start to see hilltops with no crop on them.
Sure.
Excuse me. And so that becomes a concern. Now, the other thing we find, the reason that the cost of soil erosion has gone up, is the market conditions have changed. We have higher yields now than we did 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And the value of crops. We see more canola and soybeans we did 30, 40 years ago.
So it's not a linear, it's a, what do they call those curves that go higher and higher at a more rapid pace?
It's a non-linear curve. You're exactly right. And that becomes a key consideration in how you figure out how much soil loss you can tolerably lose and what the economic impacts are.
So I guess the lesson learned here for farmers from what you've studied over the last 30 or so years is what? What is it? Farmers do need to do less tillage, or farmers need to incorporate different styles, or what are you evangelizing here at the conference?
Well, I am certainly suggesting you need to reduce tillage, and you reduce it to reduce wind and water erosion. You also need to reduce it to reduce tillage erosion, and that the solutions for reducing soil erosion by tillage is a bit different than wind and water erosion, you have to look at how far soil has moved, how much and how far. So it's a different way of looking at tillage and its impact on soil. So anything that affects soil movement is probably equally as important as how much residue you leave on the surface. So you really have to look at both of those things when you're evaluating any type of field operation. So that's certainly one key point to take from the presentation today.
Let's go back not just 30 years, let's go back 120 years, back to the late 1800s, when we first, or even, I guess, 140 years, when we first started breaking the sod in the valley and westward and across northwest Minnesota. How much have we lost since then? What did we start with? We had probably had, now we have 4, 6, 8 inches of topsoil. We probably had a lot more than a foot of topsoil back then.
Well, it depends. It's a very good question. But we may have only had 4 or 6 inches of topsoil. And on the hilltops, it may have been 2 or 3 inches of organic-rich topsoil. So it depends on the type of topsoil. With annual crop production, we have kept the topsoil probably about the same depth. But we keep incorporating subsoil, and the soil that we see at the surface is now less and less quality. So it's less and less productive. And that's typically what you see. So if you look at a lot of the hilltops around, you probably still have, by definition, the same depth of topsoil. But it's actually mostly subsoil that's in this. It's not really productive. But the depth is the same.
So what do you want farmers to do here as we move forward into the 21st century?
But one thing I was talking about towards the end of my presentation was kind of an interesting approach that farmers have come up with for solutions. And it's actually looking at the landscapes we have in Minnesota. There's examples of it as well, where you have a lot of topsoil that's just sitting at the bottom of the slope because of tillage, and moving that topsoil back up to the eroded hilltops. And that way you get an instantaneous improvement in soil quality of those hilltops, and you see dramatic yield increases. And it's a pretty innovative practice that farmers can do, and some of them are doing it. We've started research on that, and I've worked with colleagues in Minnesota and South Dakota on that research, and we continue to do that work to look at how to come up with a set of practices around that movement of topsoil to try and get increased productivity. And we see that as probably the most radical, but certainly the most cost-effective approach to increasing yields on these eroded landscapes.
So you're asking guys who have done too much tillage to start doing more tillage to drag that soil back up to the top of the hill?
I wouldn't call that tillage. The farmers that have done it, there's some examples, like I mentioned in my presentation near Fergus Falls, where they use the earth scrapers, which they normally use to clean out the surface drains, the swales in the field. And they take that topsoil and they put it back up in the eroded hilltops. I guess you could call that a form of tillage, but it's corrective tillage. How's that?
Okay, good term. getting things back to where it was.
And I think that's a real benefit to the farmers. And again, you get a very rapid response because you have topsoil there the next year. And the crop responds immediately to it. And you can get a considerable economic return on it. When we've done economic analysis on it, we found that that practice pays for itself within 3 to 5 years, which is probably the most rapid return on investment for a land improvement practice there is.
All right. Visiting with Dr. David Laub, University of Manitoba soil scientist. We've got a lot of folks listening on KNDK in Langdon, KXPO in Grafton, and particularly up there in Cavalier and Pembina County of northeast North Dakota. Salinity and just these, what Grandpa used to call alkali spots, the white, it's the salt on the surface. Is that a big problem in Manitoba also?
It is in certain areas in certain years. We do have the same phenomena where you have salts coming to the surface. You've had a period, a wet period. Obviously, the water table comes up. Salts are right near the surface. And it's fairly regularly you can find those white patches you're referring to on the soil surface. Yeah, it's not that extensive in Manitoba as you would find maybe in some more hot, humid air or hot, dry areas. Saskatchewan, that's really a hot spot for salinity. But we do find it in Manitoba as well, along the base of the escarpment heading down into North Dakota.
What are the agronomists and smart farmers doing to counter that up there?
The salinity?
Yeah.
There's a lot of work that's been done on monitoring, so getting a better handle on where it is, how extensive it is, using EC equipment, like Varis has a unit to map out electrical conductivity to give an indicator of salinity. Farmers have been doing things like improving their drainage as a way to keep the water table down. Mm-hmm. And that's probably a key element. Where you have a persistent salinity problem, one thing that farmers are encouraged to do is look at the recharge areas in the landscape and make sure they're consuming the water up there by putting forages up there, water-loving crops. If you do that, then you have less water moving through the landscape, creating those high water tables and salinity hotspots.
Okay. I've asked pretty much everybody, how much corn still standing? But in Manitoba, there's not much corn to begin with, but how much is left?
Well, there's more and more corn every year we find up there because the varieties are improving and the farming practices are such that you see more and more corn. I forget the exact number of acres, but it is certainly becoming a significant crop. Soybeans has been the same way recently, and I was saying in my presentation there's some municipalities that have as much as 40% soybean production. So those crops, the corn and soybean crops we think of as being part of the Great Plains or the Great Lakes states and into the southern Great Plains, certainly are expanding. Now, in terms of how much is left, there is certainly some corn left in the field, and there's also some soybean left in the field. I think most of the farmers have been able to get that off of the field with cold temperatures. They're able to get it on the land, but I think there's still some out there. Far too much.
Wow. And in soybeans, that might not get taken care of.
That may be, yes.
Yeah, alrighty. Dr. David Laub, University of Manitoba soil scientist, thanks for coming down and visiting with everybody and sharing some great knowledge you have up there at the University of Manitoba. Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet.